जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी शोधानंदन अज जन रंजन शोधानंदन अज जन रंजन
Yeah.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Mukam Karuti Vachalam Pangulam Gayate Giram Girim Yakrapa Kyamaham Bande Shri Guru Dinatharinam Shri Prabhupada ki jai, poor Bhaktivinoda ki jai. So, it's nice to be here, see all of you. I had some ideas what to speak about, but somehow or other the inspiration didn't come. So, what I would like to do, and I've done it before, is ask you to suggest what you would like me to speak about or ask a question. Yes, that was fast. I may not answer it, but you can ask it. I reserve the right not to answer it. Anyway,
thank you so much. This was perfect. I've had this question in my mind for a while now.
Okay, perfect.
So there's the individual jiva and there's Krishna. And the individual jiva is always going to be an individual jiva, whether in the material world or in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
It's always going to be an individual jiva.
Yes.
So in a sense, we're always going to be separate from Krishna, even though we're in the spiritual world. We're still, even though we're enjoying in the spiritual world, we're still in a sense separate from Krishna because there's the jiva and Krishna and we're associated in the spiritual world. So here in the material world, we're also enjoying separate from Krishna in that sense too. So why is it that we're in Maya here and not in the spiritual world, even though we're still separate from Krishna and enjoying separate from Krishna?
Because here we're separate in consciousness and there we're not.
And
if you want to be more specific, if you want to enjoy with Krishna, then, not you, all of us, if we want to enjoy with Krishna, we have to give up the consciousness that we're the enjoyer and replace it with the consciousness that Krishna is the enjoyer. To put it more bluntly, we have to give up trying to be Krishna or, you know, take his place or allow him, ask him to allow us to have a similar position. So, as long as we have any sense that anything in this world is meant for our pleasure, then we'll stay here. You won't pass the security gates in the spiritual world. You'll buzz when you try to get through. They'll detect that consciousness. Your consciousness is separate. You don't want to be enjoyed by Krishna, but you want to enjoy something. And it will beep, and they'll say, sorry, you can't get on the plane back to Vaikuntha. Until you purify, you have to take those things out of your pocket and leave them here. So that is the spiritual journey, going from I am the enjoyer to Krishna's the enjoyer. And I'm the servant. And, you know, we all understand, because it's our basic foundational philosophy, we're servants, but the depth, the width and depth of what that means is, I think, beyond most of what we all realize, what it means to be a servant. Because every time we confront Maya in some way, there's some forgetfulness that we're a servant or some action not of service. And you can kind of monitor that. Everything is Krishna's and everything is meant for his enjoyment. Have you ever seen something and said, oh, I'd like to enjoy that? Of course. Well, that means I'm not a servant. That means I forgot I'm a servant. Every time we think, oh, that would be nice, I'd like that, we just forgot we're servants at that moment. Because we forgot that that's Krishna's and it's for him. Just like Prabhupada gives the example, the young boy sees a flower and he thinks, oh, I'll pick this flower for my girlfriend. And the devotee thinks, I'll pick this flower for Krishna. So even if you think, I will do it for my girlfriend, still you're thinking, it'll make her happy and that will make you happy. In some way, isn't it? So it's interesting. And if I realized I was a servant, then I would never think that way. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that it's impossible for a pure devotee to become enamored by anything in this world. Followers, wealth. You know how easy it is to be enamored by these things. You give some nice, ordinary guy power, everyone loves him, and then he gets power and sometimes he becomes a monster. We see it all the time. You know, you're never really tested until you have these things. And we see even often sometimes more mature devotees have difficulty when they're given power, money, resources, followers, and so forth. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, the reason that a pure devotee cannot be enamored by any opulence of this world, whether it be wealth, followers, fame, opulence, is because he can never forget that he's a servant. And if you never forget that you're a servant, then there's no maya. And if you never remember you're a servant, there's only maya. So we're kind of in between right now. But every time we forget we're servants, then we think, you know, we act out of Krishna consciousness with some lust, anger, greed, envy, and so forth. Yes?
The happiness in being a servant. I feel like Krishna is the only one that's allowed to be happy then.
Yeah, because you're looking at it materially. Because in the material world, you serve the boss and you think, I wish I were the boss, right? Because he's the enjoyer, I'm the servant. But the jiva by constitution is a servant, so if he doesn't serve, he'll be miserable. And where's the happiness in the material world? It's flickering. So you can become the boss, and you think everything's great, but it's not going to be great all the time, right? So the thing is, by constitution, we're servants. And so if we don't do that, we'll never be fully satisfied and fully happy. But when you serve Krishna, so you have to serve without motive to get something. Then you'll be satisfied. Bhagavatam says that. It should be without motive, and then supersedity. Atma supersedity, then you'll be satisfied. So if you serve Krishna begrudgingly, of course you won't be happy, because you'll think, why do I have to serve you? Why don't you serve me? You're God, you know, let me ask you for what I want. So that's where the happiness equation. Or I heard a devotee today say, the happiness hack. What's the happiness hack? What's the happiness hack? Serve with the desire only to please Krishna. Because that's your nature. Otherwise, I can give you a guarantee. Trying to enjoy directly doesn't work. And if you don't believe me, we've already been trying for unlimited lifetimes. So, you know, like, how dumb are we? You know, it's like 10 zillion lifetimes, it doesn't work. You know, like, hello? Maybe serving Krishna for his pleasure works. Well, at least try it. As Prabhupada said, at least try it for one life. If it doesn't work, you can come back. Just try to be happy without Krishna. Yes?
I just wanted to add one detail to, an important detail to Prabhu's question and recent exchange, if I may.
Yes, please.
There was that Beatles song, All You Need Is Love. So if we're talking about pure love, then that also helps us understand the answer to his question, that how we can actually feel the happiness if Krishna is the only one who's enjoying. If we actually love someone, especially if we love Krishna, then automatically, because it's love, then we just want him to be happy. That's love. And that's a very deep, but powerful satisfaction. Even if externally it may seem that he gets all the fun, but we want him to have all the fun because we love him. And I just want to suggest that.
And we can add to that, it's not that he gets all the fun because he loves us more than we love him. He 10 times is what we do for him. Thank you for that. So, you've heard this, you take one step to Krishna, he takes 10. So whatever you give, he 10 times. So if I said, give me money, I'll 10 times it. You'd be a fool not to give me money. Well, she didn't trust me. But consider saying that you trust me, and I say, whatever you give, I'll give you back 10 times. And say, when? Right now. There would be a line, you know, around the block, and then the neighbors would hear, and it would go on all night. You give me 1,000, I give you 10,000. You give me 10,000, I'll give you 100,000. But Krishna will 10 times the negative also. So, do you want to compete with him? He'll facilitate that? Well, I don't know if he does 10 times, but he'll facilitate it. Yeah, so if you ever say, why is Maya so strong? That's just because you invited her. So Krishna's not in the position, well, oh, he gets everything, why not me? He gives back more than we get. And he likes serving his devotees. So as Maharaj was saying, you want to serve someone you love, but Krishna loves us also. So he wants to serve us. So here's a meditation for you. Krishna loves you. But the relationship can't work if you don't love him. So every verse in the Gita, every verse in the Bhagavatam, every verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, every word, every syllable spoken in those scriptures, and every acharya says, is just to help us love Krishna. Because that's all Krishna wants. And so we can never be happy if we don't reciprocate with Krishna's love. Because we're just taking it, and we're not giving it back. And look what we're taking. We're taking the air, the sun, the water, the food, the shelter, the clothes. We're taking everything from him. And he's saying, Madmana bhava mad bhakto, just think of me, become my devotee. And how to do it with bhakti. And we don't want to do it. And that's all he wants. And that's why we're not happy. So the only separation is consciousness. I just heard something very interesting today. One of Prabhupada's friends was describing how Prabhupada used to go in the courtyard of Rupa Goswami, and he'd be sweeping like late at night and praying. You know, he'd get up like midnight, and this devotee lived in Radhadamodar, and he heard. And he said, actually, if you go to Radhadamodar and you have the right consciousness, you could see Prabhupada there sweeping the courtyard, if you actually are pure enough. So, you know, we have all been there. Raise your hand if you've seen Prabhupada sweeping at Radhadamodar. Anybody? Of course, if you did, you're so advanced, you would be so humble, you wouldn't say you did, right? But, so, Prabhupada is there, but we don't feel it. Right? Krishna is behind every bush in Vrindavan, but we don't see it. So the separation is our consciousness. Now, we're suffering the consequence of our own consciousness, or enjoying the consequence of our own consciousness. And if you don't believe you can be happy being a servant, I will challenge you this week, just serve Guru and Krishna without any desire for yourself. Don't even think about anything. That you're going to get anything. It will be the best week of your life. The happiest week of your life. Money back guarantee. Since you didn't give any money, that's easy for me. But I can guarantee you, it will be the best week of your life. Hare Krishna. And then everything that you do, everything you like to do, you do for Krishna for his pleasure, even though you like it. He's the first one to enjoy it. That's the idea. Just like we take prasadam, prasadam's delicious. And when we're eating, we're enjoying. It's okay because Krishna enjoyed it first. As long as he enjoys it first, it's okay. Right? So you like to sing, you like to write, you like to paint, you like to do business, you like whatever. Make Krishna the enjoyer of it, then you can enjoy it. Then it's okay. I like to sing, but I don't like to sing Baby I Love You. I like to sing Hare Krishna or some bhajan or something. Because then Krishna becomes the enjoyer of what I enjoy, so I'm not the enjoyer even though I'm enjoying. I make him the enjoyer. It's simple, isn't it? That's why we offer prasadam, because he's the enjoyer. I'm enjoying prasadam. All right, you're not the enjoyer, you're not this body, etc. But at least he enjoyed it. So so it's okay. If you're more advanced, you'll honor it respectfully and so forth. Is that okay?
Hare Krishna.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for a nice explanation. So, Prabhuji, in the same line, like he was asking that where is the fun in being a servant? Can you also say that Krishna himself wanted to be one, and that's why he came at Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, saying that servant of the servant of the servant.
Yes.
So it is the highest from that sense.
Yes, that's true. And we can also add, I'll just elaborate on the point I was making, that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna wants to serve his devotee. He likes to serve his devotee. So even Krishna, even the enjoyer likes to serve. Wow. And he's hankering after service, even though he's the supreme enjoyer. So that says everything. Thank you.
And then we can see the example of Srila Prabhupada, that it is happiness and bliss because of which he left everything and so many other sannyasis.
There's a nice story. I believe it was Juhu. You know, Prabhupada said, for those of you who don't know, there was a struggle to acquire a property and build a temple. And we were being cheated by the owner of the property. And it was so bad that he had bribed our own lawyers. So our own lawyers were working for him. And it was like that bad. And he was bribing the government so we couldn't get permission to build a temple. And Prabhupada said, we have come for eternal bliss, but now we have eternal headache. So Prabhupada was, he was just, externally, internally, he was a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. And Tamakrishna Maharaj was helping him, and he said, Srila Prabhupada, I am so disturbed, I can't even chant my rounds. And Prabhupada said, neither can I. It was really bad. So Prabhupada was contemplating this situation. He said, this is so difficult. This is so hard, etc. Just, kind of reminiscing or reflecting on how difficult it is. And then Prabhupada said, but it's for Krishna. So, even though it's difficult, etc., it's for Krishna. Therefore, it's blissful. It's happiness, even though it's suffering. So, your position is better than Krishna's, because you can serve him. And therefore, he comes as Mahaprabhu to taste what it's like to serve, to be a servant. Well, very good point, thank you. Yes?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. At the story of Vritasura in Srimad Bhagavatam right now. And Vritasura is a very powerful demon, but he's also a devotee.
Yes.
When I first started reading Bhagavatam, I thought that impious people, sinners, would go to the hellish planets. But now, after having read some more, I don't understand anymore. The simple go to the hellish planets, but I don't understand. There's a demon devotee. Can you explain that?
Well, have you got to the part where he was in the role of a demon and he was more Krishna conscious than Indra? Yeah, that's interesting. Ultimately, that story is to glorify Vritasura, to glorify his devotion, even though it's in the guise of a demon. It's really there to glorify. How did Chittaketu respond to the curse? He didn't retaliate, so there's an example there. If someone ill-treats you, don't retaliate. And then he accepted the curse and the ill-treatment of Indra, and he was completely Krishna conscious in that exchange. Was Indra, correct? Is that correct? He was fighting Indra? Yeah. And he was completely Krishna conscious in that exchange. So the fact that he was in the guise of a demon was external. And the real thing is the lesson, what you can learn from that story by his behavior. I mean, there's so many things you could say about it, but that's... We were all demons, now we're devotees. If it's Krishna's, it was Krishna's will that he took that birth as a demon for the sake of the Leela. But, like Bharat Maharaj, he never forgot that he was a devotee. Which also then makes the point that if you're serious in this life, even if you're not perfect, in the next life, no matter how you take birth, you will be successful. And Prahlad Maharaj also is an example. What if Krishna wants you to take birth in the family of demons? Like, I mean, this may be a little controversial, not in the sense of big controversy, but Prabhupada has on occasion said that his disciples took birth to help him, you know, they were Vaishnavas, and to help him spread Krishna consciousness. One devotee told me there was a story. Prabhupada went somewhere and he was with his disciples, or he had just come. It was like the early days or something of that nature, and he said, "So nice for us to be together again." And he never met them before. So that's one way of looking at it. Sometimes, I mean, you could ask it to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He also appeared not to be a devotee. And he's eternal resident of Vrindavan. So Krishna has his reasons for that to happen, and then we're there to learn by their example. You know, there's a problem. If someone descends and they're a pure devotee, and they do everything perfectly, then we say, oh, well, that's because they're eternal servants, they're eternal residents of Vrindavan, of course they're perfect. You know, what do you expect of me? I can't be that way. But if they take the role of a demon, like Prahlad, or as Ritasura did, and then they act in a Krishna conscious way, then we think, oh, okay, I can relate to that. That's me. Right? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur played that role of a materialistic person for part of his life. And Prabhupada also played that role. He never said I was liberated, this or that. Because he didn't want us to think we couldn't do it. So another thing also to contemplate is that sometimes these things are not necessary to know. They're not like the real tattva. There's a story. I just heard this story. They're asking some Prabhupada some questions about the appearance of Lord Nrisimhadev and where he appeared and where he left and this and that. And they were really getting into the minutiae of it and the details of it. And analyzing that with archaeological evidence, historical facts. And Prabhupada just stopped them. He said, it's not important. What's important is the actual Leela and what he taught and what he did. These other things are not that important. So what is it that he came to teach? What can we learn from that? And that's Krishna's will. So we can learn something. Hopefully we can learn something. That's okay, or you wanted a different answer? Or you want to ask another question?
I wanted to ask another question, but your most recent point made me not need to ask the question anymore.
Say that last thing?
That you made, it's not even important to know the answers to these questions.
Yeah, it's not that important. I mean, you know, those who are jnanis just want to know everything. So if your mind is very intellectual and active, yeah, you could use it to know everything. But just understand, it's some things are not necessary to know. They're not that important. Yes. You had a question?
Can you speak that? You speak about the difference in coming from the difficulties we've gone through in this life as impediments and as opportunities.
There is no difference. He's asking the difference between an opportunity and impediment. Every, you know that verse in the Bhagavatam, every impediment is a stairway. It's a step on the stair back to Godhead. So let me ask you a question. If you had no impediments, would you be here? Be honest. Everything was just perfect. Oh, well, maybe you'd be here. Okay, well, I'll grant you. I don't want to make you feel like... I don't want to insinuate you wouldn't be here. Would you be as Krishna conscious as you are now? I've asked maybe 1,000 devotees. When you were in difficulty, serious difficulty, did you have some of the best rounds of your life? And everyone's like, yeah, that was the best time. I have a funny story for you. You want to hear it? So once upon a time I had a motorhome. And I don't think it had a heater, so we just turned the stove on. You know, the burners, and that's how we heated it. And it was December in California. We had parked this motorhome at one of the rest stops. Whatever you call them here, I forget. Turnpike, something. You know, but the highway rest area. And we had a program where we were selling prasadam at the rest stop. And so it's really cold, so I turned the heat on. As I was chanting, and I had my back to the heat, I was wearing a kurtan. My rounds were on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being good and 0 being bad. Mine were minus 10, like really bad. And all of a sudden, my shirt caught on fire. And I had big burns on my back, like felt like, I couldn't see it, but it felt like this, you know, full of fluid. And it was burning just enough that I could chant, but not so much that I could only think of the burn. So as soon as it was burning like that, it was Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And I immediately took it like Krishna's saying, you know, focus on your rounds, you know, just get serious. And you want to hear something amazing? All my rounds were good. And on the 16th round, the pain went away. I swear, true story. It was like burning for the 16 rounds, or how many rounds were left. Maybe it was 14 I had left. And then at the 16th round, it was like the last beat, 16. It was like, oh, okay, it's fine, like no burn. Thank you, Krishna. So impediments, opportunities, the same thing. The only reason it's not an opportunity is because you don't take advantage of it. That's all. Some people say, maybe you have this experience, that if you need to learn something, Krishna will create a situation, maybe a difficulty, so you can learn it. And if you don't learn it, he'll create another situation, another difficulty. And if you don't learn it, he'll create another difficulty, and he'll keep creating them until you learn it. I asked devotees, you ever have this experience? And he said, and one devotee said, yeah, my boss was driving me crazy, I was ready to kill him. And then I understood there was some lesson there for me to learn, forgiveness, tolerance, something. And he said, when I changed my consciousness, the boss was promoted to another office. It's like, okay. That was a pretty graphic demonstration of that principle. I think a lot of us have that experience. But anyway, it's something to think about, because Krishna wants to serve his devotee, but he can't serve you unless you... He can't serve you in a way that's going to be bad for you. He can't give you things that will be bad for you. So that's why Prabhupada said, when Krishna... You know, we know everything was taken away from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, Krishna did that to test me to see if he could give me everything. So okay, here's the test. I'll take everything away from you. Then you're steady. No problem. You don't complain. Equal in happiness and distress, loss or gain, victory and defeat. So Krishna gives you the whole world. You're not disturbed. Krishna takes the whole world away. You're not disturbed. In Prabhupada's case, Krishna took everything away. And Prabhupada passed the test. And then Prabhupada said, so then he gave me everything after I passed the test. So, you know, I could tell you personally how I see this. There was a show, and Madan Mohan, he always talks about the show. Those who are older will remember the show called Candid Camera. And Candid Camera was, they would create a situation, like a fake situation, and see how people would act. And I think it usually was funny. I mean, it was a long time ago. How did it? Was it funny? All the things were funny? Yeah. They create these funny situations, you know, weird situations, like, you know, you've just been chosen to be, you know, to get in the Hall of Fame of this and that, you know, for this. We heard you, you know, this little song you wrote that, you know, your friend gave us and, you know, like that. And then, you know, the person's completely bewildered and doing funny things. They come out with a camera and they go, Candid Camera, like we caught you, it was all a fake. How many of you have seen that before? Yeah, so having that samskara impressed in my heart has been helpful. Because when I'm going through something, I always think, it's a candid camera moment. And Krishna's looking, and Krishna's like, okay, what are you going to do now, big boy? You've given so many classes, big boy. You've talked about all this stuff. Are you going to do it? So for me, it's like really clear. It's like, okay, Krishna's sitting up there, you know, with his iMac, you know, 87-inch iMac, and he's watching me, you know, in 1,000K resolution. And he's like, looking, what are you going to do? And so whenever I deal with the situation that way and come out what I consider victorious, then I feel like, okay. Not that I don't feel like okay, I just experience that Krishna reciprocates. He bestows mercy on me. You want to hear another story? This is amazing. I was in a country where it was really, really difficult. I was a temple president by default. Nobody was able to do it, so they made me the president. And if something bad could happen, it happened there. It was like really bad, really difficult. So I was in a lot of anxiety. Like they say, chant Hare Krishna, your life will be sublime. I don't know about that. My experience is chant Hare Krishna, they make you the temple president, your life will be full of anxiety. Like 24/7 anxiety. So. But I stuck it out, I tolerated it, I did my duty, and we were able to be fairly successful at what we did. And shortly thereafter, I left, and I went to India. And I swear, I promised this was happening for like 3 months or 4 months. Everything I thought, it would be nice if I could do this, it happened, like within a day. It was crazy. It was like, I felt like desire trees were everywhere, or I'm like Lord Brahma, whatever I say will happen. Then it was obvious that Krishna was saying thank you. So those kinds of experiences are amazing. It was like, it was crazy. I mean, I was thinking, well, it would be nice if so-and-so were here and we went here. And so-and-so shows up and he's going to that place. And does he want to come? Like that. So that's how we should think. And then we could think, oh, a difficulty. Oh, here's an opportunity. Krishna's watching me. I get to show him what I'm made out of. Right? Like, if you love somebody and they're in distress, it's an opportunity to show your love. So, you know, it's like, go jump in there, they're drowning in the ocean. Go dive in. You know, save them. Risk your life. Wow. What an honor it was to be able to risk my life to save you. I love you so much. Like that. That's how I see it. Someone had their hand up?
I don't have a question anymore.
Mahamma Prabhu, please forgive me for another question, but when you love someone, you love everything about them. You don't pick and choose what you like or don't like about that person. I'm the type of devotee that I like to see everything in Krishna and Krishna in everything. And when you love Krishna, you love everything about Krishna. The point I'm trying to get at is, I see Krishna as an impersonal feature. I see it none different as Krishna. And the Bhagavatam, the scriptures, also say that his impersonal feature is none different than himself. And
his personal feature? Or
his impersonal feature is none different than himself. And
impersonal or person?
His impersonal.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I know it sounds contradictory, but I see Krishna in the impersonal. It's almost like I can't divide Krishna. Oh, here's his personal, here's his impersonal. It's like he comes in one package.
Yeah, exactly.
So I get a little offended sometimes when I read in the scriptures when Prabhupada or, you know, our acharyas, you know, heavily criticize Mayavadis.
Well, what you described is not Mayavadi.
Well,
what you described is Krishna conscious. Because you know Krishna is a person, and you know you're not Krishna, so you see his energy everywhere, so you see him everywhere, so you can see him as impersonal. But when you think you are him, then it's a whole different ballgame. That's why they're criticized.
But when I see Mayavadis being attracted to Krishna's impersonal feature, I see them as being attracted to Krishna, so I wouldn't criticize them for where they're at.
Impersonalists, you don't have to criticize, but Mayavadis you do, because they're blasphemy. They're trying to be Krishna, they're denying Krishna. But impersonalists, they're not. They're just choosing the impersonal. They're attracted to the impersonal feature. So then it's okay. But Mayavadi, you ever see Prabhupada get upset with Mayavadis? That's out of his love for Krishna. Because this is what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said. He said the Mayavadis are chopping off Krishna's arm and head and legs. That's what they're doing. So you know, it's like, your mother has no head, no legs, no arms. Now if I say, I see this is a beautiful house, it's a manifestation of your mother's. Like, I see your mother everywhere in this house. And in the furniture, in how she organizes the kitchen. It's like that. That's us.
But when you know the truth, the lie can never really disturb you, because you know the truth. The problem is when we take the lie as the truth, then that's the problem. But if you're firm on the truth, the lie can never really disturb you.
It disturbs, but you know your mother's beautiful and like that, but I say your mother has no head. If you love your mother, you should punch me in the face. Yes? But I don't have any affirmations to sell. Why talk about it? Oh, we have. I'm only kidding. You have? Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good. We have some job affirmations. Okay. Yeah. So, I wrote a book called Job Affirmations. Actually, the way I came up for it, there was a devotee in Dubai, and he had attended my japa classes, and he really benefited from it. He really took it to heart, and he said it really changed his life. So then, when I came up with the affirmations, he saw them, and he said, why don't you make a book, japa affirmations? I didn't even think about it. He said, we'll print it for you. So I said, okay. The way the affirmations came about is the affirmations were principles that I was teaching. And after teaching like 20 years, it was kind of a process of elimination. Which principles are the most, I saw the most, were most powerfully transforming devotees' japa, most powerfully improving devotees' japa. And so the thing about affirmations, which is maybe not common in ISKCON that we use this word affirmations, but affirmations allow you to experience the emotion of a tattva. So you have a philosophical principle, but it doesn't mean you feel anything. Right? You just understand it in your head, but you may not feel it. But when you create an affirmation, you take that principle into the emotional level. So, and the emotional level is what causes us to act, not the intellectual. Because we know so many things we don't do. Right? But when someone gives an inspiring lecture and it hits your heart and emotion, you're like, I'm going to do this because you're feeling it. So, I didn't fully understand that when I was writing them. I understood something about it, but after writing them and seeing the effect, and I've written another book, Affirmation. I've written like 6 affirmations, so I'm doing a whole series of affirmation books. So I saw that by saying affirmations, we're kind of like creating new vasanas, new subconscious programming in our mind. Like, because, you know, what's my programming? Job is a chore, it's a duty, I have to get it done. All right. Let's say I love to chant, I want to chant, I get to chant. Let's say this is the most sacred time, the most beautiful time. Let's say that. Let's create that attitude. So by saying it, you can actually, by affirming that, you can actually change your mental system. Vasana is your subconscious, so you could say you're creating new samskaras, new impressions. So you can create emotion and you can create new impressions, new attitudes. By it's, you know, you might look at it and say, it doesn't seem right. Because if I say, one of our affirmations is I get to chant, I want to chant, and I love to chant. And so you might be thinking, well, I don't feel like that. I feel like I have to chant, you know, because if I didn't make a vow to chant 16, maybe I wouldn't chant any rounds, or I'd chant a few, or I wouldn't chant 16 every day. So big problem, big impression that many of us have, that I have to chant. Have to means there's no love. It's duty. It almost means like, sometimes when we say I have to, it means I don't even like it. It's almost like an offense to the Holy Name to say I have to chant, isn't it? I mean, wow. Here it is. Get it while you can. Get it while they last. And we have them on cards also, like tarot cards with pictures for each affirmation. There's not that many left, so see Radha Priya if you want to get one. So devotees would write me and they said, somehow or other, just by saying I get to chant, I want to chant, I love to chant, I started relishing chanting. It like shifted. It's like, it's that easy? I didn't even know it was that easy. But that affirmation was there to counteract that I have to. With like, hey, you know, you don't have to. I mean, like, there's no gun at your head. I know you made a vow, but still, you don't have to. But it's your fortune that you have the Holy Name. And, you know, there's a lot of things you want to do in this world, but this is the best thing. And if you say, I love to chant, yeah, you do as soul. As a pure soul, you do love to chant. So somehow by saying it, it shifts the attitude from I have to chant, I don't like chanting, to I do. It's kind of like you're reprogramming the program that's making it difficult to chant by creating the program that makes it easy to chant. And it's as easy as saying it. Wow. Hare Krishna. And then what happens if you say it and practice it, then it just becomes how you chant. You don't have to read them anymore. That's just how you do it. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So it's like my whole Japa workshop retreat in a little book. And only in affirmations. And the book explains the affirmations, what it means. But I'll give you a good promotion. Jayadvaita Swami. You could imagine Jayadvaita Swami when he heard I did an affirmation book, because that's not bona fide, right? And he's very strict. He's like, affirmation. And he read it, and he was like, yes, I really like this. So I was like, okay, if he likes it, that's good. That's good promotion. So it has its effect. Now, the thing is, when you say an affirmation, you have to feel it. You have to feel into it. You have to say it as if it's true for you right now. So you have to say, I want to chant, I get to chant, I love to chant. You say it as if, I'm going to make this true for me, because on some level it is true. And I want to feel this way, I say it. And then when you say it and feel it, it alters your attitude. And then it makes chanting easy. And then you won't want to chant, and you won't want to stop. Hare Krishna. Yes. It's after six, so if you don't want to stay in the temple, it's fine. You can go take prasadam.
Just thank you, Prabhu. Just justification from me is that after hearing you speak about difficult situations, I have this realization that it's like you planted a seed. A seed being planted, but and I feel I can go forward facing my difficult situations joyfully.
Mm.
And I hope it's not just a passing thing. I hope it stays. So thank you for that.
It's so much, you know, like a fighter, martial artist, boxer. If you think you're like a great fighter, you're looking to fight the best fighters, isn't it? So it's like, okay, you know. If this is what Krishna's throwing at me, I'm thankful, you know. It's like, we're going to have to get really strong to deal with this. Thank you, Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Jai Gopal Manandi, Hari Hari Bol.